Robinhood Radio presents Agriculture from Turkana Farms. Here's Peter Davies.
A few weeks ago, Mark, writing to defend his passion for his favorite edible weed, lamb's quarters, focused on how factors other than gustatory enjoyment and nutritional needs often determine how we come to favor various kinds of foods. Well, coincidentally, not long after Mark's lamb's quarter bulletin, I came across the most perverse example of this process of, shall we call it, food association, in an article in the June 18th issue of The New Yorker entitled, "Meal Ticket, Foodies Are Flocking to a Remote Archipelago for the Ultimate Locavore Meal," by Rebecca Mead. The archipelago referred to is the Faroe Islands, situated 200 miles north of Scotland, which Ms. Mead describes as an autonomous outpost of the Kingdom of Denmark. Because of its isolated Viking past, and despite being surrounded by the rich sea life of the Atlantic, a strange, rather minimal cuisine has evolved among its tiny population, which eschews all shellfish, langoustine, and most varieties of fish, the locals subsisting largely on boiled or dried haddock and cod and fermented lamb. The 50,000 inhabitants share the islands with 70,000 sheep. Because the Faroes have always been virtually treeless, historically there was no way to preserve food by salting or smoking, both of which require heat. The only way to preserve fish there has been to hang it from the eaves of houses until they are wind-dried and fermented. And the only way to preserve lamb has been to hang cuts in a shed-like structure called a hulaar, which has plenty of apertures to let the constant winds pass through to get the lamb cuts properly fermented. It takes several weeks of hanging to get the fish to the requisite edible state for the Faroese, whereupon it is served topped with, get this, a fermented tallow paste made from lamb intestines. All this served with boiled potatoes. Bon appetit! The story of lamb preparation is even worse. Apparently the hanging lamb, through the action of wind and mostly time, eventually takes on a thick greenish mold and a pungency Mead describes as, quote, somewhere between Parmesan cheese and death, unquote. The local name for fermented lamb is rest. In one historical account, a visitor in the mid-19th century records the Faroese as regular eating rest, crawling with maggots. Mead's reaction to her first plate of rest was, quote, the aged lamb on my plate looked like shreds of an automobile tire, and it tasted like something I wouldn't be able to wash out of my hair for a week, unquote. The Faroese language apparently has dozens of words for degrees of rottenness. For instance, stadnadur means dried on the outside, soft on the inside. Karmodin means completely rotten. Well, enough has been said to point out how unlikely a food destination the Faroe Island should be, and would be if not for a few restaurants that have attempted to bring the local cuisine to a larger public, one of which recently was given a single star by Michelin. The recipient restaurant, called Cook's, is considered avant-garde in the Faroes for its attempts to meld conventional foods, such as shellfish and langoustine, with some of the signature Faroese dishes, in particular fermented lamb. In one of Chef Ziska's rest dishes, he provides a final flourish with a topping of ground mealworms he buys at the local pet store. And he often serves his rest dishes with rice, the white grains of which to him humorously hark back to the days when rest was eaten with maggots, and which, since rice is not locally grown, he justifies by noting that rice has been imported to the Faroe Islands for centuries. Other cooks' specialties include confit of snail, roasted cod head, and cake made from plankton. It is this restaurant that has put the Faroe Islands on the foodie radar. Mead's assessment of those she shared a communal table with at Cook's one evening was that they were there not for culinary perfection, but rather for its uniqueness. Her table included several Americans and an Englishman, a Danish couple, and a Canadian, but significantly, no Faroese, who, as they dined, all seemed thrilled to spend an evening eating dishes, quote, nobody they knew had ever eaten, unquote, according to Mead. And possibly it was also the exorbitant cost of this strange meal that was part of the pleasure. At $220 a person, with a wine pairing costing an additional $170. Not only are many of the Cook's food offerings for the most part perverse, by our culinary standards anyway, but simply getting to the restaurant is a perverse adventure in itself. To reach the Faroe Islands, one must first fly either to Reykjavik, Copenhagen, or Edinburgh for a connecting flight to the Faroe capital, Tórshavn. But once one has landed at this remote capital, the restaurant is nowhere near at hand, having recently relocated outside the city in an even remoter location, which requires a half-hour drive on a one-lane highway through the mountains to the shore of Lake Lanar, whereupon the road disappears, leaving only a dirt track. Following this dirt track requires fording a stream, after which a rutted rock pathway leads to a turf-roofed 18th-century farmhouse, Shea Cook's. The chef-owner prides himself on its pure farm-to-table menu and on the tiny windows typical of ancient farmhouses, because from his point of view, the magnificent scenery of the farmhouse's setting should not compete with the food, wine, and camaraderie at the communal table. In part, the conversation at table that night focused on the difficulty of getting to and from Cook's, the inconveniences of which seemed to considerably increase the group's eating pleasure. Mead estimated that her dinner companions at Cook's had collectively logged 32,000 air miles to get there, to say nothing of the exciting and probably expensive taxi ride on impossible roads to and from the restaurant. The irony was not lost on Mead that this group, which had been attracted to this most locavore of cuisines, was in fact the least locavore presence in the room. In her words, quote, at Cook's, we were getting not just extreme cuisine, but an experience that was quite literally outlandish. A bunch of foreigners had gone to absurd lengths to eat the food that the natives didn't fully expect us to like, unquote. Her observation was corroborated by the chef-owner-manager of another Faroe restaurant called Rest in Tórshavn itself. The owner greeted her by saying, as she took her seat, you will probably dislike everything you eat. Sorry, unquote. I would say not just outlandish, but downright decadent. The foreigner's enthusiasm for such an exotic dining experience demonstrates, as Mark suggested, that so much of our appreciation for food is the result of myriad, often rather odd, factors other than flavor and nutrition. Surely we should appreciate a certain modicum of exoticism in our quest for interesting food. But please, dear listeners, let's try to keep our appreciation for food in proper balance and within the bounds of sanity. Turkana Farms should be exotic and locavore enough for anyone.
Peter Davies and his partner Mark Scherzer are proprietors of Turkana Farms, specializing in heritage breeds of livestock on their 40-acre farm in Germantown, New York. Peter also presides over Turkana Odyssey, in which he customizes cultural tours of turkey for small groups which he calls an insider's view of Turkey, and his third hat is Turkana Gallery of old and antique kilims, which he operates in the Wall Street area of Manhattan. Mark presides over his law firm, Mark Scherzer Law Office, which specializes in health law, also in the Wall Street area. Their farm website? TurkanaFarms.com. Their email? farm@TurkanaFarms.com or 518-537-3815.